Welcome to the One White Woman podcast. Being here means you're probably aware of how much more aware you could be about the facts and the challenges that underlie the realities of systemic racism in the United States. Hopefully, too, you yearn for opportunities to heal the wounds brought on by the appalling facts of our country's history. That's why I'm here, sharing conversations I'm having with people who can help you and me to increase our understanding and help us to become more effective in the repair on all levels that needs to happen for everyone's sake moving forward. The upcoming conversation is with Rochelle Zola, a 72-year-old white woman who has an impressive history of her own, volunteering all over the world for causes that matter to her, and who, like me, only recently gained clarity about the harsh realities of life in America for Black people. Her response is an energetic mixture of dedication to peeling back the layers of miseducation in which we have all been immersed, plus ardent emotions and iron-willed convictions that white passivity is not an option. Reparations are very much in her sights, not what reparations should look like, because that's a different conversation. She respectfully explains and understands that must include the Black community's perspective and input. But simply and certainly that reparations must happen, that they're long, long overdue. My name is Nene White, and I am one white woman, and I am so grateful to you for being here to learn with me. Thank you and welcome. Rochelle Zola, you are a white woman who feels strongly that H.R. 40 should be passed and supported by all Americans. And I am so glad that we met so that I can find out why you feel so strongly about this bill.
Oh, my goodness. Where do I begin?
Yeah.
I moved to Chicago in August of 2019, knowing I had something to learn. And from Black and Brown communities. And what I've actually learned is that I had to re-examine what I already knew. I knew there was harm being done in the Black communities, but I didn't understand the extent of it. And so that's where my journey has begun. Just that we, as a white person, I need to understand the depth of it and realize I need to participate. That's the short answer.
Well, I think you're right. And I have a great quote from Martin Luther King that says that, yeah, we need to do that. That's our responsibility. Because white people, this whole white, Black supposed split is our making or our ancestors' making, and we're letting it continue. So,
yeah, I didn't, I've always known on some level that the Black experience, lived experience, isn't my experience as a white person.
Right.
But I didn't know the extent of it. To put it in perspective, I get into my car and I don't think about that I'm going to get stopped and that something bad could happen that I get stopped.
Right.
When I speak to people, everyone I have spoken to, there is an anxiety the minute they get into their car. The possibility that they will get stopped and what will that look like when they are stopped. I think about, I can walk into a store and I'm not followed around. And inevitably they are followed around. I'm not talking just about a young kid, a youth, I'm talking about even as an adult. There is this suspicion just because of the color of their skin. They aren't able to walk down a street. And we hear these things on the news, but we don't realize that it really is, and I'm going to use the word systemic. There is a system in our culture that says we need to be fearful of someone in a darker skin.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't understand the depth of that, the stress that it puts on them every single day.
Yeah, I know. And when you say you didn't understand it, it's like there's even more than understanding it. It's like you've put yourself in a situation to actually get closer to it so that you can empathize with it, which means take that experience in a bit. Or can we take this a little deeper?
Oh my goodness. I live in a Latino community, and most of my time is spent, when I got here, I literally went to every workshop, every training, every seminar, every conference I could go to sit in spaces with Black and Brown people. Mm-hmm. And through doing that, they saw that I kept showing up. It's like, what's this white woman keep showing up?
Right.
And with that, I'm very much about developing relationships. So I started speaking, everyone I met, I would speak to, we exchanged information, and then I'd get on the phone. And before COVID, I was able to see them. And they shared their experiences. And in that sharing, I now feel that so deeply. It's so personal. You know, now when I look at it, you read something in the news, and I used to rage years ago even, but I didn't know I had the power. I didn't know I had the influence. I didn't have the money. That's where I was coming from.
Right.
And I depended on leaders who I did not hold accountable.
Right.
And now I'm holding myself accountable and holding leaders accountable. Right. So it's this sense of I am now inescapably with them, one of us together. You know, if something happened to my brother, it would be like, no, don't you dare talk to my brother that way.
Right.
And now it's personal. They are my brothers and my sisters.
Yes.
In a way that I did not just with Black people, just in general, you have your circle of friends and people that you know. And now my world has expanded so tremendously. It's like, don't you dare mess with him or her.
Right, right. I love that. I love that. I love you for that. And that is what it takes. And I relate to a lot of your experiences, because it does take getting closer to it, getting closer to the pain, the challenges, the world of the people that we've only read about in the headlines. It does take getting closer in one way or another. And some people have described to me that it takes courage. And I'm not quite sure that I think, maybe it's courage, but it seems like it's something else that makes that happen. What do you think made that happen from you?
I know that I'm not frightened by people.
Right.
And I think that's a big thing. People are afraid of the unknown. They're afraid, you know, I live in a couple miles from a park here in Chicago. It's called Douglas Park. And it's probably mostly African-Americans who frequent the park, but there's other people, there's brown people, there's white people. But I'm so comfortable there. If someone is playing with their kids, I just go over to them and say, I'm just so happy to see you two playing. You know, I'll just go up to them. If I like somebody's haircut, you know, I'll say, I just love the way your hair is. So, you know, it's like, and they'll go say, you know, hey, thanks, mama. You know, when they say that, you have to understand I'm 73. So mama is quite appropriate.
Yeah.
And so it's, I don't know where that ease came from, because I was a scared little child. So it wasn't coming from this is how I was all my life. Yeah. But as an adult, I've been that way. And people recognize when you're genuine. It's as simple as that.
Yes.
It really is.
Yes.
And does that take courage? I think that takes heart. You know, just to be able to say, I recognize you. No, it's like, I recognize you.
Exactly. And when that's a huge part of what all of us want, is to be seen, to see and be seen, you know, and regardless of the superficial elements of skin color or hairstyle or whatever. So yeah, I appreciate that explanation very, 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 very much.
I think we just have to get, you know, people say, get out of your comfort zone. It's
and your old and your habits and your biases and your automatic responses.
Because people think, oh, I don't belong here.
Yeah.
But we only don't belong here if we determine we don't belong here.
Yeah.
You know, when I first came, the reaction was like, who is this woman? And right. It's like, I didn't expect them to trust me. I don't expect anyone to trust me when I just walk in the door
right.
or come someplace.
Right. Right.
And then they get to know who I am. And right. through the conversations.
Right.
And then you share, like I said, we share each other's heart. Do I know everything about them? No.
Right.
And we know each other's heart.
Right, right, right.
Yeah.
And that's the way it all unfolds over time, you know, with beautiful. So HR 40, let's talk about that now, this whole concept of reparations that seems to be getting building a momentum in this country of building attention, you know, whether it's positive or negative, but you certainly have some very clear ideas about it. And I want you to share that now, please.
Oh, well, reparations. First of all, this bill was put forth in 1989 by John Conyers, just the idea to study the idea of reparations, to have a conversation. And I didn't know about it back then. So I'm brand new to really digging into our past, the history.
Mm-hmm.
And I look at it and I think about our Congress, though, our elected officials, right? And they weren't willing to have a conversation
mm-hmm.
just about, you know, the trauma that has taken place since 1619
mm-hmm.
and that has continued. You know, we had people in bondage, and then we freed them, but we freed them without a penny to their name, without a piece of land, without education. And we said, you're now free.
Except.
So
what did that freedom look like?
What does that look like? They had
right.
no way to make a living.
Right.
We gave them nothing. And that they survived is incredible. I look at the strength of the people.
Oh.
To strive, you know, to thrive also. And still we continuously keep them back. They have been second-class citizens, and we need to acknowledge that in every way.
Yeah.
You know, we had the Jim Crow laws, and we still have them. They don't look the same. We don't say for whites only, for colored only, but we still very much have a prejudice against a group of people that did us no harm.
Right.
We're the ones that did the harm.
Right.
And so what I want so badly is to have a national conversation, to share the truth of what has been going on. All the gaps that have continued. You know, it's the wealth gap. It's the education, the employment, the housing, the way we do loans, the healthcare, the environment.
The justice.
All the injustices, the violence, the voting rights, the mass incarceration, I could go on and on.
Right.
You know,
right.
And we have a false narrative.
Yes.
And I want more than anything, I first want the conversation, because once we have the conversation,
right.
I trust that people are going to see that we owe a huge debt.
Right.
We owe a huge debt because there's no way for the African-American to catch up unless we acknowledge that we have deliberately put in place laws, institution, policies that have kept them from what, you know, people talk about, the American dream.
Mm-hmm. And of course, the effort of them being held down happens from the side of the white-skinned people. And that's such a wrong direction and focus of energy that's just so negative instead of being positive and all of us growing together, you know, to put that energy into holding people back is just such a waste.
It's fear. It's such a fear.
Yes.
I'm hoping, you know, who do I hope to touch when I do this hunger strike?
Okay. What did you say?
I'm going to do a hunger strike.
Okay. Tell us about that, please.
So I came here and I knew I had something to learn, like I said, re-examine. And I started going, especially with Zoom, with COVID, I got onto so many spaces with people, Black people, Mexican descent. And I kept learning more and more, as we talked earlier, about the depth of the pain.
Sure.
And then I did Zoom calls, and I have a very diverse group of people that I do Zoom calls with. And then I was like, what else do I need to do? And I can't explain it. I just know I'm supposed to be doing a hunger strike to bring attention to the country, what we need to do to move us forward. And I say we, it's very much, we're very divided right now, Nini, you know that. I mean, the division is in the papers every day, in the news, in our communities. And I need to speak up, use my voice in every way, and to use this body in every way I can to say, just take a chance on looking at the information. That's what I have done. I came and I have read so many books, and I'll name a few just to tell you, like Just Mercy by Bryan Stevenson.
Fabulous book.
Fabulous book. And I'll tell you what, if I could read a page a day, because it was so devastating to hear the harm done.
Yes.
Same thing with The New Jim Crow by Michelle Alexander. Yes. Again, if I could read a page a day. So what I'm hoping is that I will get people to say, you know what? I've been fed some information. And we have lived with that information. I feel duped. I think about, oh my goodness, I went through high school. First of all, I didn't know any Black people, but I also didn't have a prejudice around it. That wasn't how I grew up, but I didn't have the information of what their lives looked like. And the very little I did didn't impact me. At least I didn't think it impacted me. I know very differently now. And so this is my way of just, you know, what I'm hoping is that people are going to say, wow, this woman is willing to do this. What has she gotten that maybe I'm missing? So that's what I'm hoping for. I really am asking people, because I had to re-examine my beliefs. And what was holding me back from acknowledging the fact, here's the thing. I wake up every day, and because I wake up as a white person, I have white privilege. And there's a lot of pushback against that. And this is what I know. Was at a protest after George Floyd was killed, and they chant a lot, excuse me. And they were chanting, whose streets? And the answer back is our streets. The thing is, it's always been my streets. I didn't have to worry as a kid what street I went down, where an African-American person does. Again, that same thing. So it's not something I asked for. It's something that this country is made of. We have a country where being white is a privilege. Just by walking down the street, I'm not talking about getting college loans. I'm just talking about my everyday lived experience that I go into a hospital, I get better care than that African-American. And it's been proven again and again. So that's where, yes. So, you know, the hunger strike, it's like, I want to bring attention to say, this isn't just the highliners that you're hearing about. And they're not just not hearing about George, you're not just hearing about Brianna. This is happening every day to everyday people.
Every minute of every day.
Every minute of every day.
All right. So you're going to do a hunger strike because you feel that this HR 40, this bill about reparations that was introduced in 1989, over 30 years ago, still hasn't moved forward. It wasn't killed, it just doesn't move forward. And so, what do you think should happen with that HR 40? Or what do you think would be the wisest and the most beneficial thing to happen if that passes? What do you see happening with that?
Well, for me, as a white person, and I say this to everyone that I meet, my job is to get the commission in place, to have HR 40 passed, which means it goes through the House, and then it goes to the Senate, which means it then passes S-40, and then it goes for President Biden to sign. Mm-hmm. At that point, they have a commission. And in that commission, they bring people together, explaining to the nation the full history of all the harm that has been happening since 1619, before we were even a country.
Right.
So that's what I want. I want an unbiased, full story of the history that's still continuing today. And then, and then the African American community will tell us, the oppressors, I know that word stings, and let it sting a little bit, that they tell us what we need to do to repair the harm.
Right.
That is them to do. I can't say that. And unfortunately, too many people, white people, that's what we've done, said, here's some money, do it our way, and you're all fixed.
Right.
And then that's not the way it works.
No.
It can't work that way.
Right.
We have done great harm, and we continue to do great harm. And I know that's difficult for people to hear, because they hear, I'm a good person, I'm not bad to that Black person, and that is the truth. The thing is, our culture is embedded with the prejudice, with the harm, and the policies, and the laws. And so it's not going to just, one law isn't going to fix it. But we need to do what I have done and what others have done for centuries even, to understand the depth of the harm. And then we'll see the value of the reparations.
Exactly.
And it's not going to be easy. And will it be worth it? Yes, because
so
we really become one people. We're not divided because of a color of someone's skin.
Right.
It sounds, you know, it's, you know, I don't even have the words when I think about it, that it's how it got so ingrained.
Right.
That because of someone's skin, they're not worthwhile.
Right.
It's, and so that's the power of the commission for me.
Yeah. It's the old conquer and divide. That's what happened all those years ago. Because there used to not be that division. And then when the moneyed people decided that they weren't controlling things enough, that they needed to set up some divisions so that there wasn't so much united front against what they were trying to control. But that's a whole other, excuse me, history lesson. But it is fascinating and important to understand. And I'm going to do an episode about that very soon.
We need to just pay attention. Like I said, the biggest thing is, we get into a group of people in our own circle and someone says, believe this. And it's so easy to just say, oh, I'm supposed to believe this.
Right.
And what I'm asking people is to take a second look. That's all I'm asking people. Say, yeah. I know what you've learned. Now, were you willing to go back
right.
and perhaps listen to something else?
Right.
And that doesn't take a lot of, it takes a willingness.
Yes.
I'm hoping people will be willing. That's my biggest thing. Please take a moment and be willing. Because I didn't even know the questions to ask.
Right.
I didn't even know to ask.
Neither did I. I know.
I mean,
but once I did, you know, it's like it brings light into a place of darkness in your life. That's my experience. You know, it brings so much light because it brings truth and eliminates the denial and the covering up and the, you know, the false narratives, as you say, and brings in light and truth. And I don't mean that in a hippy dippy way. It's just real life, you know, instead of some made up Hollywood version of, oh, we're the best and they're not to be considered.
Anyways. For me, it's the, you know what, for me, it was like, I thought I knew and I didn't have a clue.
Exactly. I didn't either.
It's actually a very great place to be.
It is.
And one of the things you asked why it's so important now, I mentioned, I went to so many meetings and so many spaces and there would always be someone who would stand up and say, mm-hmm. and just recently even, it's not going to happen in my lifetime. And my feeling is that I am so, I told people just the other day, like I said, you know what? It's going to happen in my lifetime. I have to trust in that. Could I be wrong? Yes, of course. But I need everyone to say it's going to happen now, because there's no reason for it not to.
Right. No reason.
There's really no reason for it not to.
No. So you're planning, tell me what your plan is a little bit more. Let's just see. I mean, you're feeling this, Rochelle. You're putting your whole heart, mind, body, spirit, and soul into this. Tell us exactly what your concept is.
May 16th is the day I'm starting my fast, and Dominican University with Truth, Racial Healing, and Transformation are doing the kickoff event in Dominican University here in the Chicago area.
Okay.
And then I plan on, like I said, I'm doing a hunger strike, however long that looks like. I 30 days, 35 days. I don't have a set time. The idea is just to bring attention to, I'm going to be doing a liquid diet, and I will be on if you look up Rochelle for HR40, you will find me on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. You'll also find me on LinkedIn as Rochelle Zola. And we will be putting out information every day on all the social media, informing people. It's really about educating.
Right.
That's the purpose for it. It really is. And I needed a platform. And it's not, I want white people to educate themselves. And the space is for African-American stories to come out, to share their truth, a safe space for them to be acknowledged.
Yeah.
And that's the purpose. It's, I don't know how else. I want so badly, I wish people knew my heart, what I feel, Nini. I mean, just this connection of humanity, and giving a place at the table, you know? And to be heard and responded to, and to share our humanity.
Exactly.
And that's what I'm looking for.
Yes.
Yeah. It's a very simple request, actually.
Very simple. Very simple. Very simple. But fundamental. My heart is overflowing now. Is there anything more that you want to say? I mean, I just feel how much you feel this. I'm with you 100%. Thank you for doing this.
I guess for people that are listening to this, go into your schools, go into your places of worship, go into your community centers, go into your fitness centers, and speak to people. People are so afraid that they're going to alienate someone else, that they're not going to be seen in the same way. Mm. I want so badly to realize, so that's the risk, that's the courage that people talk about, right? Mm. It's like, how are you going to be heard? And for me, it's like, this is a way of life for me.
Yeah.
This is who I am. And so I would love around the country for people to sign up to, you know, in solidarity, fast for a day with me, mm-hmm. and tell people you're doing that. Just spread the word, mm-hmm. that we want a national conversation, to call your representatives, to send an email, mm-hmm. you know, whatever that looks like for you, to take an action that perhaps you hadn't thought about because it wasn't on your radar. You know, I tell people all the time, I don't come from guilt or shame. Right. Or blame, I know now, so I can do better now.
Exactly.
So that's what I ask people. It's like, oh, I didn't know.
Right.
But I do today. So how do you really just get bigger than what you used to, instead of just, you know, talking to your neighbor? How can you get into the school district and say, hey, what are the history lessons we're giving? Right. What are the lessons we're giving in general?
Right.
So that's my wish, that people will really acknowledge that we owe a debt, and how can we show up and repair that harm?
Repair that harm. Yeah. So I wonder if on your website you will have any mechanics for people to just quickly zap their representatives and their senators to help move this forward, you know, to...
Well, today is May 2nd, and we hope to have our website up on May 3rd, tomorrow, Monday.
Okay.
And at that point, there'll be resources for people if they want to learn, to be educated. There'll be resources for them to actually tell us what they'd like, how they'd like us to participate and to share how others are participating. Actually, I hadn't put on a list of representatives or anything like that. That's easy for people to go to for their own area, ask who is my senator, who's my representative.
Yes.
They can do very easily because that's what I've done.
Yes. So, yes.
But we can remind people to do that for sure on the website.
Yes. Yeah. And maybe even with a little sample letter that they could, let me know if I can help you with that.
Absolutely. And we also have a mission statement. And if people want to sign the mission statement just to say they believe that HR 40 needs to pass, that's something we're doing also. And they will see a copy of the mission statement. I won't read that to you now, but it's very basically what I've been sharing, that we need to hear the truth and we're interested in getting, we demand that HR 40 gets passed.
Okay. So just say it one more time, just so we have absolute clarity that you're, because I've spoken to you a few times before this episode, and what went into me more deeply with each conversation was that you don't have any specific solutions. Your mission is the commission.
That's it.
And I think that that's really important for that to be understood from all sides. So speak on that just a little bit more before we say goodbye.
It's our mission is the commission. I have about 20 people have been a core group. They're not doing the hunger strike with me. They are supporting that and they will fast with me. Okay. But we wrote this mission together, and it's our mission is the commission. Again, I want the national conversation. I do not have the answers for the Black community, what reparations look like. I will support them and what they come up with. Mm-hmm. The thing is, white people have not been willing to have the conversation. Mm-hmm. So again, the mission is the commission. So badly, we have to have the national dialogue. We can't have one state talking about it in one way and another state talking about it in another way.
Right.
This is a national dialogue. This is how our country was built, on the backs of Africans. And we need not only to talk about that. People say, oh, it's so long ago, it doesn't exist anymore. You're right, I didn't own slaves. And we also never had a conversation up to this day of the harm, the trauma that continues every day.
Yes.
So yes, the commission, that's the purpose of that.
Yeah.
So we get within our very beings what has happened and continues to happen. When George Floyd was murdered, you have to know that Black people, I can look at that and I was horrified. But the trauma of knowing that when a Black person looks at it, that could have been them so easily. So easily.
Yeah.
And we really don't have it in our white consciousness that this is happening every day, that fear, that stress of walking out the door in a Black, because of your Black skin, being seen differently, being seen as a target.
Yeah.
And so, yes, I don't know any, so many ways I can say it, but I want us to hear without a doubt, without filters, without political parties with this. I mean, we're going through a political system for sure, but the conversation is about our humanity.
Right.
And that's the piece. So that's what I'm calling on. I'm not calling on a political party, if you've noticed, through this whole thing. I have not mentioned that.
No.
And it's because it is not about that.
Right, right.
It's about us looking at our truth. And so thank you for having me here today. It is so important that all our history books look the same, that they look the same, that this is what really did happen and is continuing to happen. And just because it's not happening in your community doesn't mean it's not happening in our country.
Right.
And that's why I think people get lost, because they say, well, that's not my lived experience.
Right, right.
But it is someone else's lived experience. And we need to acknowledge that, honor that, listen to them.
And heal it. And heal it.
Together we said that.
Yeah. And yeah, yeah. Thank you, beautiful woman. Thank you, thank you.
Thank you from my heart. Sending out so much love to everyone.
Thank you, yes. The kind of love that's strong, that heals, that makes things move forward, that's clear in its thinking and right action. That's what you're about. And that's what I respect, Rochelle. And I'm so grateful to you. And you know I'll be keeping attention, all my attention on you and what you're doing every day. I thank you for what you're doing.
Thank you.
All right. We'll talk soon, okay?
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
Rochelle's hunger strike will begin on May 16th, 2021. You can learn more about plans and how the strike is progressing at any of her social media sites, all of which contain the words Rochelle for HR 40, and which will be updated by her volunteer support team. Please refer to this show's notes to find Rochelle on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. I have all the links in the notes. I'd also like to share with everyone about an organization that has given me an abundance of hope and energy because its solutions-oriented approaches reflect uncommon levels of intelligence, integrity, and practical creative positivity across the full spectrum of human development and aspirational achievements. The organization is the Black Achievement Fund. You can learn more at their website, www.baf.solutions. It's not www.baf.com. It's www.baf.solutions, because solutions really is what the Black Achievement Fund is all about. Thank you again for being here to share the learning with me. Until next time.